Recently, I read an essay in which the author proposed that people don't know how to be bored anymore. In our day and age, we are scared of having nothing to do. We've grown to fear empty time. Picture this. It's a Wednesday night at Avon Lake United Church of Christ, where my wife works. Wednesday night is choir rehearsal night, so Wednesday night, dinner's my responsibility. I stop at Pizza Hut to pick up dinner. Now imagine that I arrive at Pizza Hut before my order is ready. What do you think I do? More often than not, I pull out my cell phone to see if anybody has messaged me in the 5 minutes since I shut down my computer here at work. I'll see what friends have posted recently on Facebook or Twitter. Might end up watching a brief video of cavorting baby goats or a skit from Saturday Night Live. That's how I might fill those empty minutes of waiting. But in my defense, I'm hardly unique. It seems that everybody does it. When I chaperoned the high school band trip to Walt Disney World last year, I was struck by how common it was for people standing in line to be staring at their cell phones as they slowly, slowly inched forward toward the boarding area. And it seemed that almost everybody did it. Kids, adults, seniors, friends, siblings, newlyweds. Some were engrossed in what they were viewing. Others actually carried on conversations as they scrolled and strolled side by side. We certainly seem to fear emptiness, empty moments. But Jesus showed us another way. Jesus showed us that emptiness is not something to be feared, but to be embraced. In Lenten worship this year, we're considering how we might discover unexpected gifts from God when we feel our lives have entered a dark woods. That's a term coined by Dante in his classic work, The Divine Comedy. He said that when in our lives we experience periods of uncertainty, or when we feel like a misfit, or when we see temptation at seemingly every turn, it can feel as though one has entered a dark woods, a place where one feels lost and disoriented. The path is hidden. The way forward isn't clear. In periods when we are feeling particularly uncomfortable, our natural inclination is to try to escape, to try to get away from the discomfort, to run in any direction, hoping to get out of the dark woods. But the witness of the Bible suggests that God uses those periods when we feel our lives have entered a dark woods. God uses those periods to reveal a gift that we might not discover any other way. And so today we consider how emptiness could actually be a gift from God. For some, it might be hard to imagine that emptiness could actually be a gift from God. After all, one of the strange paradoxes of the gift of emptiness is that to the average person, emptiness appears as a negation of self-worth, of identity. But for a moment, imagine if we were to stop being filled with anxiety, anxiety about things like success, what we look like, having it all together. Imagine if we were to stop being filled with anxiety about what others think of us or the future or the past. Imagine being emptied of anxiety about health and wealth and dying and living. Imagine if we no longer relied on being defined by all that baggage that we carry around. Imagine being free of all that. Who would we be? What would we be? We'd be empty. And that's not a bad thing. Being emptied of the worries and anxieties that eat up so much of our thought and energy and time, being emptied would make way, make space for God to mold our hearts and inspire our thoughts. If we read or listen to the Bible expecting an instruction manual offering step-by-step guidance in simple, concrete terms, if that's what we expect, we're going to be frustrated. For instance, consider the confusing, challenging words of Jesus that we heard Jill read from Luke's Gospel this morning. Let me set the scene for you. Now, the disciples had been living and traveling with Jesus for some time now. So the honeymoon was over, so to speak. That initial period of cautious politeness that had worn off. They were able to be more open, more frank with each other. So one day, Jesus asked his disciples what others were saying about him. In other words, what was the word on the street? Or as the musical Jesus Christ Superstar phrased it, what's the buzz? Tell me what's happening. Well, after the disciples told Jesus that many folks figured that he was a prophet of old, perhaps even a reincarnation of the prophet Elijah. After they told him that, Jesus turned the question on them. What did they think? Who did they say Jesus was? And that's when the bold, outspoken disciple Peter declared, "You are the long-awaited Messiah. You are the Son of God." Now, I wonder if the disciples hadn't realized that until Peter said it out loud. That indeed their leader was none other than the Messiah, God's chosen one, who the Jewish people had been seeking and awaiting for centuries. Centuries. And yet there he was, in their midst. Did that awareness suddenly change how they felt? I have to think so. Here's why. I'll give you an example. Many of you know that our oldest son, Kevin, and his wife, Katie, live in New York City. They commute to work on the subway. They take the A train, literally. From time to time, they'll tell us, or they'll text us, or post on Facebook. They'll tell us that on their way home from work, or on their way to work, they'll notice in their train car some famous musician, or a movie or TV star, or a Broadway actor. As you can imagine, usually dressed casually, hat pulled down low, sunglasses, yes, even in the subway. Now, naturally, Kevin and Katie don't approach or even acknowledge that person. That's not cool. Not if you're a New Yorker. But still, spying that celebrity out of the corner of their eye gives their ride home new life, new excitement, vibrancy. And maybe the disciples felt new life, excitement, vibrancy when they heard one of their own, Peter, tell Jesus to his face, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Maybe they thought, hey, being seen with Jesus could reap some benefits after all. Maybe people will show us a little more respect. Maybe we'll get free food, a comped room at the inn. It might even impress the ladies. The disciples might have been imagining how hanging with Jesus could make their life a little easier, a little more comfortable. And that's when Jesus uttered some challenging, confusing words. "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake will save it." Those who lose their life for my sake will save it. What's he mean by that? It occurs to me that Jesus lost his life long before he died on the cross. I think Jesus lost or surrendered his life when he decided that he wasn't going to allow his life to be filled with concern about whether he was popular or comfortable or conventional. He wasn't going to be consumed by desire for access or wealth or power. He emptied himself of such concerns. And as a result of that emptiness, Jesus was open to receiving the Spirit of God. When he lost or surrendered worldly concerns, he saved or set aside his life to pursue God's will in the world. Those who lose their life for my sake will save it. Now, if that were a natural thing, being able to empty yourself of worldly cares, if that were a natural thing, everybody would do it. But our human nature fills us with worldly concerns. Losing our lives for the sake of Jesus doesn't come naturally. Losing our lives for Jesus means we let go, we stop clutching at things that have no eternal value. When we elect to lose our lives, we refuse to allow this or that petty matter to control us. Instead, we surrender ourselves to God. My guess is that God's gift of emptiness rarely occurs all at once. I think we progressively learn to let go, just a little bit at a time. All right, I suppose this is a silly example, but I'm going to give it anyway. My hair has been thinning for many years. I had not resorted to a comb-over of Trumpian proportions, but I still was able to brush hair to cover much of my scalp. And from my point of view, I was still a hairy beast. So I remember the first time someone said to me something about my being bald. And I was shocked. And it hurt. Me? Bald? Can't he see all the hair I do have? Well, after that comment, it only took a few years. But eventually I was able to accept the fact that dormant follicles had won the war. I let go of that bit of vanity just as my scalp had let go of hair mostly. So I've been able to empty myself of that vanity about my hair that used to occupy some small measure of my thoughts. And losing that trivial preoccupation has freed up a tiny space in my being. And now I have the opportunity to take that new little opening in my soul and repurpose it. It used to be preoccupied with one of my rather petty desires. Now I can surrender it to be used to seek God's desire for my life. Some of us at some point may find ourselves in the dark woods of being consumed with the smothering preoccupations of everyday life. In that dark woods, the way forward may not be easily seen, but with God's help, we can take stock of where we are. We can examine our lives. We can see how well or how poorly we do at surrendering our lives to God's will, at losing our lives for Jesus' sake. And we may discover that God comes to us with a gift. The opportunity to empty our lives of preoccupation so we can more fully embrace God's will. Amen.